flips instead. But yeah, I should be watching this within the week, I think. I'm going to get a night out to watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That never gets old.
Yeah, that never gets old. Again, the Beatles in the background with Twist and Shout. Let me do a little more trivia about this one here. Let me say, what did I get on this? I love the crazy credits, like I said. Oh, this was interesting about Charlie Sheen. He shows up and he plays the drug addict in the police station when Jennifer Grey is down at the police station. So Charlie Sheen, he actually stayed up for over 2 days before the scene was shot, so he wanted to look really strung out. Which I thought was pretty good.
He had to try and look strung out.
Yeah, you see him. Yeah, at the time, yeah, he's probably, what, 20? In his 20s, the point.
Probably.
And, yeah, and his eyes are, like, all purple. It looks like he had been up for days just doing drugs. And Matthew Broderick and Jennifer Grey actually were engaged after this movie. But they were actually in a car accident, and then after that car accident, they basically had broken up after that. A mother and daughter actually had passed away in the accident. They had a fatal crash in Ireland, and Matthew Broderick and Jennifer Grey were in the same car, and then they broke up after that. But one of the other interesting things here is if you see the license plates in this movie, they all point out other things that John Hughes had either written or directed. So you have VCTN for National Lampoon's Vacation, for the license plate for Katie's. Janine's is TBC for The Breakfast Club. Tom's is M-Mom for Mr. Mom. Principal Rooney's is 4FBDO for Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And Cameron's father's Ferrari, which is an exception, has a license plate which reads Nervous, which basically sums up Cameron's character.
That's the only license plate I actually remember.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know what's funny, too, is like I remember seeing Star Trek Generations years later, and I'm like, hey, that's Cameron. And he plays the captain of the Excelsior, right?
Yeah.
Is it the Excelsior? That's Sulu's ship. I forget which one. Actually, he's on the Enterprise B. That's what it is.
Enterprise B.
Yeah, and Generations, which is Star Trek 7. Yeah, all of a sudden Cameron shows up as a captain and he doesn't know what to do, so he calls on Captain Kirk to save the day yet one more time. But yeah, it's a great movie. So again, Beatles in the background, Ferris Bueller's Day Off from 1986, George's Five Flicks, that's number 3. Let's see what else I got here. Might have one more from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, otherwise we can go on to the next one. Actually, no, let's go right on to the next movie. Here comes George's flick number 4.
We are a rescue team, not assassins. Now, what do we gotta do?
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
We pick up their trail at the chopper, run them down, grab those hostages before anybody knows we were there. What do you mean we?
Deep in the jungle, where nothing that lives is safe.
You lose it here, you're in a world of hurt.
Showtime.
Jen.
Knock, knock.
An elite rescue squad.
You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Is being led by the ultimate warrior.
We need the best. That's why you're here.
But now...
What's got Billy so spooked?
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
They're up against the ultimate enemy.
Holy Mother of God.
Nothing like it has ever been on Earth before.
She says the jungle just came alive and took him.
We cannot see it.
No blood, no bodies. We hit nothing.
But it sees the heat of our bodies and the heat of our fear.
Whatever it is out there, it killed Hopper. And now it wants us.
It kills for pleasure.
He was skinned alive!
It hunts for sport.
He's killing us one at a time.
We're all gonna die.
But this time, it's picked the wrong man to hunt.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Century Fox presents Arnold Schwarzenegger. Predator. The hunt begins Friday, June 12th at theaters everywhere.
91.5 WMFO Medford.
And Mary bought Uncle John. He claimed he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Woo, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah. Well, long, tall, Sally, she's a bit of a species guy. Everything that Uncle John needs. Oh, and he ducked back in the alley. Oh, baby. Yes, baby. Ooh, baby. Having me some fun tonight. Yeah.
Flick number four is Predator from 1987. So this one isn't a comedy, but it's got some funny things in it. It's basically an action sci-fi thriller. War movie. And a horror movie. A little bit. So this was done by John McTiernan, who I think did Die Hard too, if I remember right. I gotta look that up. I think he might have done Die Hard. John McTiernan. Stars Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carl Weathers, Bill Duke, Jesse Ventura, The Body Ventura. The plot is a team of special force ops led by a tough but fair soldier, Major Dutch Schaefer, who's Schwarzenegger, is ordered to assist a CIA man on a rescue mission for potential survivors of a helicopter that's downed over the remote South African jungle. And not long after they land, Dutch and his team discover they have been sent in under false pretenses. The deception turns out to be the least of their worries, though, when they find themselves being methodically hunted by something not of this world, a.k.a. the Predator. It was done by 20th Century Fox's Rated R at a running time of an hour and 47 minutes. The budget was $15 million, and it made a cool $60 million, so it got its money back. This is probably one of my favorite Schwarzenegger movies. Why'd you pick this one, George?
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite 80s Schwarzenegger thrillers. This is a true thriller, right?
Yeah.
You're following this platoon of soldiers through the jungle. You haven't seen the face of the enemy yet. You know, they just keep getting like picked off left and right. You have no idea what they're facing.
And they're badasses. They're not just soldiers. They're the cream of the crop.
Yeah. These are like SEAL Team 6 type level soldiers, right? Going in for the special ops mission, and they have no idea what's coming at them. I don't know. Just the feeling of the movie is very just tense and exciting. And
yeah.
It's so original, too, for the time. Like, if you're going to make a movie like that now, I feel like it's going to be based on a comic book or something that's already been done.
Exactly,
by
yeah.
a more original, creative mind. This came out at a time when, like, Hollywood was just producing all these, like, original concepts and ideas, and this was just, I don't know, it just stands out as one that just passed the test of time, too. Everyone knows Predator.
Yeah, and fans of time travel should also know that Alan Silvestri did the soundtrack to it. So you hear it in the background. It sounds very similar to Back to the Future because he did Back to the Future. He had just got done doing that and They asked him to do Predator.
That's super similar.
Yeah. So I got the Predator suite in the background. It's about 15 minutes of Alan Silvestri with the Predator. And just, you know, this is when the Predator's chasing him through the woods and, you know, it's quiet and then it's loud. And one of the scenes that's awesome that I was watching earlier today is when they rip down like the entire jungle with all the guns.
Oh, yeah. And they're just firing
nothing. They're just firing crazy.
And there's and smoke.
And what's his name? What's the name of the character? He's got a Gatling gun.
Jesse Ventura's character.
It's Bill Duke. He's got a Gatling gun, right? Or maybe Jesse has it and then Bill Duke uses it, but he's got this giant Gatling gun that's just ripping down everything in front of him.
And it runs out of bullets.
Bullets and he keeps going because he's so scared.
Yeah.
And Schwarzenegger just looks at him like, all right, enough. All right. But I love that scene. And also the scene where the Predator is basically hunting them. So you don't really know what you're watching the first time you see it, but you're looking through the Predator's eyes. And what I like about this movie too is it kind of treats its audience with a lot of respect. It doesn't kind of sugarcoat it for you. It doesn't spoon feed you what's happening. You have to kind of figure out what's going on. And you're like, oh, okay, this is through the Predator's eyes right now. And you're like, there's a lot of moments where you're like, what the hell am I looking at in this movie? It's just really weird.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, not a lot of overexposure, right, in the script. They don't exactly come out and tell you what's going on.
Yeah, plus the Predator's a chameleon, so they have these really weird, like, it almost looks like something moving underwater. So you see the jungle, and then, like, something goes by, and it just kind of shifts. You know, there's a lot of neat little effects in there.
And then you get to see how the world looks through his perspective after he takes his helmet off, I think, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you see it again, and it's even more raw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's another great reveal, too, toward the end of the movie, where you realize the Predator's really wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And you get to see what he actually looks like, and you're like, what?
He's not pretty.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. And definitely one of the best Stan Winston creatures of all time with the mandibles in there. And this is something that I read for trivia about this, which is interesting, is Stan Winston, who's the creature guy who made all these creatures, he was with James Cameron on a flight, and he was showing him like initial drawings of a Predator. And James Cameron said, you know, I always wanted to see an alien that had mandibles. And James Cameron basically, you know, told him that and gave it to Stan Winston. That's one of the reasons why we got the Predator looking like it does.
Awesome.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. Another one. So this is around the time with The Running Man for Schwarzenegger, right before Total Recall, which is another great Schwarzenegger movie. But it's just one of those nice 80s action flicks. But it's a step higher than a regular 80s action flick. It's a little smarter than the action flicks of the 80s, I think. It's a good pick. It got pretty good ratings on IMDb. I think it was about a 7.0 on this for IMDb. So just a great flick. Check it out if you can. And the guy in the suit was just amazing, too. You know what was interesting, too? Did you read the original trivia? Who was the Predator to begin with?
You know,
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he hated being in the suit. And he was running around, and it originally looked like a lizard. It looked like this. It looked like almost like a regular like Close Encounters of the Third Kind alien type of lizard, and they switched it, and they ended up getting that really tall guy that's like 7'6" or something like that as the Predator in it. So what's great is you see Schwarzenegger, who's huge, you know, and you see this Predator, which is bigger than Schwarzenegger, you know.
It would have looked a little different because Jean-Claude Van Damme, isn't he something like 5'4"?
Yeah, he's short.
Short guy.
And he was mostly upset because he wouldn't get to use his martial arts skills.
Right.
So that's why he ended up leaving the movie. But I saw the remake, Predator 2, interestingly enough, I only saw once, the one with Danny Glover.
Is that when he's in the city, the Predator?
He's in Los Angeles, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. The remake with Adrian Brody, I thought was pretty good.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
No.
So Shane Black, who's also in the movie, he's the director of the next one. He plays like a communications officer or something in the original Predator. And he's going to be the director for the movie that's coming out in October. So they're actually having Predators come out in October. And supposedly it's going to be in the same universe as Predator 1 and 2, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, the actor who played the Predator was 7'2.5".
Yeah, what was his name?
Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall, that's what I was thinking of, yeah.
He died young. So,
and he shows up as the helicopter pilot.
He does, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away, right? Yeah, he died in 1991 from AIDS, of all things. He had pneumonia.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, what a shame. And also, he was in The Misfits of Science, which was a great, great show from the 80s. I used to watch that. I think it was on, like, Thursday or Friday nights on ABC, The Misfits of Science.
Another large character in a costume he played was Harry from Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, with John Lithgow, Harry and the Hendersons, yeah. And he shows up in Big Top Pee Wee, and he was in Star Trek Next Generation as well. So yeah, that's Kevin Peter Hall who showed up in, as the Predator. So yeah, just a great movie. Yeah, Jesse Ventura as Blaine. He's got some great one-liners in there, just as good as Schwarzenegger. Oh, I don't have time to bleed. Schwarzenegger with his "If it bleeds, we can kill it," and he just delivering these things like just so dry, you know. But really, really good flick. Yeah, and Carl Weathers, of course, who's Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies, plays the CIA operative Al Dillon, and they give each other the coolest handshake of all time.
Best handshake
when they come in and just
ever.
they grab each other's hands and it's flex. Like an arm wrestling match. Yeah. He's like, "You're getting soft, doing pencil pushing at the CIA, Al." But so that's Predator. Fourth flick here today on Watch This with Chris Earl. I'm here with my brother George Wolford, and he picked his five flicks. Let's move on to number five here. I'm going to fade on out from Alan Silvestri with the Predator, and we'll do number five. Fifth flick, Glengarry Glen Ross, crime drama mystery from 1992. Very big play by David Mamet. Director is James Foley. Starred Al Pacino, Jack Lemmon, Alec Baldwin, Kevin Spacey, Ed Harris, and Alan Arkin. It's an examination of the behind the scenes at a real estate office. That's the easiest way to put it. The studio was New Line Cinema, rated R. Running time was an hour and 40 minutes. The soundtrack was by a guy called Wayne Shorter, here in the background. Kind of a jazzy type of soundtrack and a very New York type of soundtrack, New York, Chicago. Budget was $12.5 million. Interestingly enough, this did not make any money. It only made $10 million in the box office. It has a very high rating of 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb. And this is also going to be our scene of the week. So tell me about Glengarry Glen Ross, George. Why'd you pick this one?
I think it's my favorite stage-to-screen movies.
Yeah.
It's essentially, you know, like you said, it was a David Mamet play. Very dialogue-driven, but somehow just works on the big screen. I think, you know, it's just got great performances all around. Alec Baldwin... probably his best, in my opinion, his best time.
He steals it from all the other guys. And he's nobody at the time. And he's pretty much just getting into Beetlejuice and a couple other movies, Hunt for Red October.
He's out there with Alan Arkin and Al Pacino and Jack Lemmon, just stealing the show.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
And everybody's good in it. Yeah. I mean, everybody's just great in it. Even Jonathan Pryce is in it too, and he's fantastic as the victim, really, pretty much.
Patsy.
Yeah, he's pretty much the victim because they do show the other guy that Jack Lemmon goes afterwards, but he gets an edge up on Jack Lemmon, doesn't let him in his home. You know, when he tries to go there and sell real estate to the guy in the rain.
That's right. Yeah,
it's interesting. This movie, like, it's always raining. It's just always miserable. It just seems like they're all just stuck.
Yes.
And it has a great, the production is pretty good because you have that office that's just open. So these guys can't get away from one another. And it's constant competition, you know. So you hear the other person's business all the time. And the only person that has the door is the manager, which is Kevin Spacey, who can close the door and nobody knows what's going on behind the door.
Who has no respect from anyone on the floor.
No, he has no respect for any most. And pretty much what's interesting is they kind of pair up and you get to see, you know, some mutual respect from some of the others, including like Al Pacino. And Al Pacino and Jack Lemmon have a couple of good scenes, and Kevin Spacey and Jack Lemmon, and Alan Arkin and Ed Harris, and Jonathan Pryce and Al Pacino. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, they're mostly pair scenes. You're right.
And David Mamet, of course, did all kinds of scripts, and one of the things that was big for him is he always put the swears in there. You know, he always had a lot of swears in there. And this movie just has tons of F-bombs.
There's so many.
And I think that was one of the things for going from theater to film. You know, it's pretty dark. It's a pretty dark movie, but it's also very funny. You know, it does have a lot of really, really funny bits in it. But in the end, it's pretty much kind of a sad looking at what happens in the real estate world and what the life of a salesman is.
Yeah, no one comes off looking great at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Really.
What was cool about this movie as well was the scene with Coffees for Closers and the whole monologue with Alec Baldwin. It wasn't in the play, and so Mamet actually wrote it specifically for the screenplay for the movie, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Well, it works.
Yeah, because you literally have the guy downtown, so you get the impression that Alec Baldwin actually works in like New York City or Chicago, and these guys are on the outskirts. You know.
Yep.
With the Chinese food place across the street and the subway maybe leading into the city, but they're not actually part of the hot action.
Right.
You get the impression that they're just struggling to get by.
Like White Plains or something.
Yeah, yeah. Even Al Pacino is just like king of the losers, pretty much. You know, it's like he's doing really well as a salesman, but it seems like, well, if he were in the city, would he be doing as well? Does he just stay there because he's the leader of all of them right now and he's comfortable with that? You know, you get the impression that he could move on and do something else. But he likes being the top dog in the small setting. You know,
he could win that Cadillac every month.
That's right. And he makes sure that Kevin Spacey's character knows it, Williamson. When the Glengarry Glen Ross leads go missing, he makes sure that he wants his Cadillac because it put him over the top when he takes Jonathan Pryce's character out to win the to get the real estate and put him over the top for his prize.
What are they selling? They're selling timeshares in Florida. Is that
a lot of it's just land? There's land and there's also timeshares. So you get to hear a few different real estate things that they have. And they basically are all getting old leads, and then these Glengarry Glen Ross leads are new leads, so they're all looking forward to talking to new people rather than trying to get all these old people back on the hook again and trying to get money out of blood from a stone, pretty much. So this is always Chasing Rainbows in the back. And it had a very jazzy soundtrack. It had Al Jarreau on there and a couple others. So I think we'll... I think this is the point where we're going to do our scene of the week.
Oh.
I like to call it here on Watch This with Chris Earle. It's called "Are You Ready for Your Close-Up?" Which, of course, it comes from an old movie. One of my favorites. Are you ready for your close-up?
Is that Sunset?
From Sunset Boulevard? Yeah, when she comes in, the old silent screen actress comes in, and that basically is the end of Sunset Boulevard. So let's do the scene from Glengarry Glen Ross. We picked a scene where they are in they're in the office, and it's a scene between Alan Arkin's character, which is Aronow, George, and Williamson, which is which is Kevin Spacey's character. So let me see. We'll have blue skies in the background, I think, of this. That's what we'll do. So this is from Glengarry Glen Ross. This is George Wolverton and Chris Earle performing this scene from the 1992 movie between Aronow and Williamson. Why don't you start us off there, George?
Come in here. I work here. I don't come in here to be mistreated.
Go to lunch, will you?
I want to work today. That's why I came.
The leads come in.
That's why I came in. I thought I...
Just go to lunch.
I don't want to go to lunch.
Go to lunch, George.
Where does he get off talking to a work that way to a working man? It's not...
Will you take it outside? We have people trying to do business here.
That's what I was trying to do. That's why I came in. I meet Gestapo...
Excuse me.
I meet Gestapo tactics. That's not right. No man has the right to call an attorney. That means you're guilty. You're under suspicion. He says corporate. We'll go downtown. That's not as long as I've...
Will you get out of here? Will you get out of here? Will you? I'm trying to run an office here. Will you go to lunch? Go to lunch. Will you go to lunch? End scene. It's pretty good.
I don't think I had lunch today, Chris.
I didn't have lunch either. You know what I did? I made myself breakfast and second breakfast. I had a ham and egg on an English with a little cream cheese.
I think I did the same. My second breakfast was
which was good.
Exciting. That was banana.
You want to do it again? Let's try a different soundtrack in the background.
Right.
All right, let's try this one. We'll do You Met My Wife, Wayne Shorter. Let me see how this one sounds. No, I think we need something a little more exciting there. Well,
something
maybe
more frenetic.
Street of Dreams, maybe? Oh, here we go. I'm always chasing rainbows. Let's try this. Do you want to be George again?
I'll be George again.
All right, go ahead.
Come in here. I work here. I don't come in here to be mistreated.
Go to lunch, will you?
I want
to
work today. That's why I came.
The leads come in. I'll let you know.
That's why I came in. I thought I...
Just go to lunch.
I don't want to go to lunch.
Go to lunch, George.
Where does he get off talk to that way to a working man? It's not...
Will you take it outside? We have people trying to do business here.
That's what I was trying to do. That's why I came in. I meet Gestapo.
Excuse me.
I meet Gestapo tactics. That's not right. No man has the right to call an attorney. He says corporate, or we'll go downtown. Cooperator, we'll go downtown. That's not.
Will you get out of here? Will you get out of here? Will you? I'm trying to run an office here. Will you go to lunch? Go to lunch. Will you go to lunch? End scene.
I think it worked better with the first track.
You think so? Yeah, I think so too. I don't know.
Cooperate. I missed that twice.
Let's see. Let's try Prelude to a Kiss, maybe in the background. Easy Street. This could be it.
Oh, I think this might be it.
Want to try this one?
Let's do this.
All right. You want to be George again?
I'll be George once more.
Okay.
Come in here. I work here. I don't come in here to be mistreated.
Will you go to lunch? Go to lunch.
I want
to
work today. That's why I came.
The leads come in. I'll let you know.
That's why I came in. I thought
just
I...
Just go to lunch.
I don't want to go to lunch.
Go to lunch, George.
Where does he get off to talk that way to a working man? It's not...
Will you take it outside? We have people trying to do business here.
That's what I was trying to do. That's why I came in. I meet Gestapo...
Excuse me.
I meet Gestapo tactics. That's not right. No man has the right to call an attorney. That means you're guilty. He says you're under suspicion. He says cooperate or we'll go downtown. That's not... As long as I...
Will you get out of here? Will you get out of here? Will you? I'm trying to run an office here. Will you go to lunch? Go to lunch. Will you go to lunch?
I like that one.
That was good. All right, end scene. That was our big scene of the week. You ready for your close-up? I think you did a good close-up there.
Thanks.
Yeah.
It's it's hard sometimes to know when the... If you're looking at your lines here, to know when the line above you stops.
Yeah.
and when to pick up. You kind of got to read the whole thing first.
I think Gloria Swanson as Norma would have been proud. She would have been proud of that close-up from Billy Wilder's Sunset Boulevard, of course. Will you go to lunch? You know, that's actually not bad. I wouldn't mind if a boss told me to go to lunch.
Yeah.
You know?
I never get
bosses
that.
Bosses never say that.
They never tell me that. I should cause more disruptions in the
I'd
office.
I'd be going to lunch all the time. Yeah. Glengarry Glen Ross, film number 5 of George's 5 Flicks. That's good stuff. Let's move on. You want to do a quiz?
Let's do a quiz.
All right, let's do a quiz. You want to do the quiz or now showing? What would you like to do? Want to do the box office or you want to do your quiz for the week?
Let's do the quiz.
All right, let's do the quiz. We're going to do the alpha genre movie quiz. Be back here in a moment. I'm going to give you a quick PSA. It is Watch This with Chris Earle and George Wolfen and here with you until 7 p.m.
WMFO Medford.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes. And you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to. Nope. I'm sure you've got a perfectly good excuse. Kids, work. I get it. You're busy. So what better time than now? Let's begin. Raise one finger if you're a man. Ladies, none yet. Oh, count in your head if you're driving. Now, 3 more fingers for everyone over 60, 2 over 50, 1 over 40, 1 more if you're not physically active, another finger if anyone in your family has type 2 diabetes, another if you've got high blood pressure. If you're overweight, raise another finger, 2 if you're very overweight, and 3 if you're really overweight. You've just taken the world's first audio prediabetes test. And if you're holding up 5 or more fingers, visit doihaveprediabetes.org or talk to your doctor. There's no excuse, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
It's WMFO Medford. My name's Chris Earle. Guest today is George Wolfen in on Watch This. We listened to his 5 flicks. Now we are going to do the alpha genre movie quiz. It's today's genre is the gangster movie. If you score 7 or above, you will get a good DVD. If not, George, you will get a shite DVD. Unfortunately, I forgot the DVDs today. They are sitting at home, but it will be a copy of... Do you have The Big Lebowski?
I don't think I do.
All right. It is a copy of The Big Lebowski is the big prize. Otherwise, it is The Terror with Jack Nicholson,
oh,
which is
that.
An old... You have The
I
Terror.
Have
You're kidding me.
No, it's got Boris Karnoff.
Yeah, and yeah. Jack Nicholson shows up yeah. in it as well. Oh, you already have that.
Oh, it's horrendously bad.
Oh, all right.
I mean, it's...
I'll have to give you another copy of something yeah. else then. I'll give you another copy of Frogs, maybe. I gave away Frogs last week.
Oh, I don't have
week.
Frogs.
Yeah, so it'll be a bad one if you don't get it. I have a feeling you might, though, because you're pretty good with these gangster movies. So what I do on Alpha Genre, Chris Earle's Big Movie Quiz, is I pick a genre and I do a dirty dozen. I pick 12 movies that I highly recommend that you should all watch before you die. Of course, there's more than 12, but these are the 12 I picked for today, and they will all be on the quiz. The movies that I picked today for 12 gangster movies you need to watch before you die are, and you can comment, George, if you've seen it or not, The Godfather from 1972. Godfather 2 from 1974. I know you've seen both of those.
I have.
Scarface from 1983. The Untouchables from 1987. Goodfellas from 1990. Carlito's Way from 1993. Pulp Fiction from 1994. The Usual Suspects from 1995. Sexy Beast from the year 2000. 25th Hour from 2002. The Departed from 2006, and No Country for Old Men, which squeaks into the gangster movie genre in the year 2007 it came out. So are you ready for the alpha genre movie quiz, George?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go. And in the background, we have the Godfather theme here for you. In the movie Goodfellas, which character... Oh, I should mention this, too. The first 10 of the movie quiz are multiple choice. The last 2... numbers 11 and 12 are bonus ones, each worth 1 point, where you have to guess the correct answer without any help. So just so you know, the first 10 are multiple choice. In the movie Goodfellas, which character literally takes the coffee to go? Is it Henry Hill, Jimmy Conway, Tommy DeVito, or Frankie Carbone?
It's Frankie Carbone.
That is correct. One for one, it is Frankie Carbone. In the movie The Departed, who plays Captain Keenan? Is it A, Mark Wahlberg, B, Martin Sheen, C, Matt Damon, or D, Jack Nicholson? In the movie The Departed, who plays Captain Keenan?
Police Captain was Martin Sheen.
That is correct. Captain Keenan is played by Martin Sheen, who, of course, gets thrown off of a building and splattered everywhere. In The Godfather from 1972, what kind of fruit does Don Corleone have in his mouth when he dies? Is it A, a banana? Is it B, a coconut? Is it C, an orange? Or is it D, a watermelon?
He scares his grandson with an orange peel.
That is correct. All right, 3 for 3, George. Doing well.
Not bad.
In The Godfather Part 2... what was the name of the real-life mobster that the character Hyman Roth was based upon?
Oh.
Was it A, Meyer Lansky? Was it B, Bugsy Siegel? Was it C, Al Capone? Or was it D, Francis Ford Coppola?
It's either got to be Bugsy Siegel or Meyer Lansky.
Think Cuba. Hyman Roth.
I'm going Meyer Lansky.
That is correct. It is Meyer Lansky who actually called up Francis Ford Coppola after he saw the movie and he said, couldn't you have made me a little happier in the movie? Isn't that great? And called him up. Who directed 25th Hour from 2002? Was it Martin Scorsese? Was it Francis Ford Coppola? Was it the Coen brothers? Or was it Spike Lee?
I think this is the only one on the list I haven't seen. Was it Coppola?
That is incorrect.
No.
It is Spike Lee, surprisingly. What? Spike Lee. Edward Norton in 25th Hour is basically, he's going to jail, so it covers his last day out with his friends. And it's a really, really great movie. I love it. It's basically set in 2002, right after 9/11, so you start to see some of the cleanup in New York City.
Okay.
And Spike Lee did an awesome job at that. Check that movie out if you get a chance to. It's great. So you got 4 out of 5 so far. In the movie Pulp Fiction, at the world-famous Jackrabbit Slim's restaurant, how much does a milkshake cost? Is it $10? Is it $4? Is it $5? Or is it $7?
See, Travolta needs to know what a $5 shake tastes like.
That is correct. Very good. All right, number 7. Who wrote the screenplay to Scarface? Was it A, Brian De Palma, B, Martin Scorsese, C, Oliver Stone, or D, Quentin Tarantino?
So I know De Palma directed it. I'm going to go with De Palma as the writer, too.
That is incorrect. It was Oliver Stone.
Oh.
Oliver Stone actually wrote that one.
Okay.
In the movie, The Usual Suspects, who is Kaiser Soze's right-hand man? Is it A, Keenan? Is it B, Kuyan? Is it C, Kobayashi? Or is it D, Keaton? Who is Kaiser Soze's right-hand man?
The name on the bottom of the cup.
Keenan.
Kobayashi.
Kuhan. Kobayashi is correct. Very good. You got it. Let's do the last ones. In the movie Sexy Beast, who's the mastermind behind the bank robbery? Is it A, Gal Dove? Is it B, Teddy Bass? Is it C, Don Logan? Or is it D, Dirty DD? In the movie Sexy Beast, who is the mastermind?
He's got to put on airs for Teddy Bass.
That is correct. Very good. And finally, number 10. And the multiple choice. And then No Country for Old Men. What beverage does Anton Sugar like to drink? Is it A, milk? Is it B, coffee? Is it C, Coca-Cola? Or is it D, Slurpees?
Milk.
That is correct. You're on fire, George. You got 8 for 10. Here's the last two bonus questions. Name John Leguizamo's character in Carlito's Way.
Benny Blanco from the Bronx.
That is correct. Very good. Very, very good.
I've seen that in like 20 years.
Yeah, but you remember Benny Blanco from the Bronx. Because you're supposed to remember right. Benny Blanco from the Bronx. And in the movie, The Untouchables, who plays Elliot Ness?
Oh. Kevin Costner.
That is correct. Very good. So out of 12, you got 10 out of 12. You got yourself a Big Lebowski DVD.
Oh, the big one.
Yeah, when I see you again, I will have the Big Lebowski DVD for you. Very, very good. That is the Alpha Genre Movie Quiz here on Watch This with Chris Earle, here with you every Wednesday from 5 to 7 p.m. on a WMFO. I would like to do something we haven't gotten the chance to do in the first two shows, which is actually talk about something that's streaming now. So let's go into this next thing. Streaming now here. We're going to talk about the show Black Mirror. And we'll do a little intro here, and we'll be right back. Listening to WMFO Medford, Massachusetts. It is Watch This with Chris Earle. My guest today is my brother George Wolfenden. And we're going to talk about Black Mirror now. Streaming Now is the section of the show that we're doing here. So Streaming Now is basically me discussing a television series that I selected for the week with my guests. So this one is Black Mirror. I haven't gotten a chance to, but I've been trying to fit this in the last couple of times I did the show. And this is an anthology series that explores a twisted high-tech world where humanity's greatest innovations and darkest instincts collide. Again, it's called Black Mirror. It started in 2011 up until the present. I call this part Streaming Now because you can find this as an anthology series, and you can go in and you can watch all the episodes currently on Netflix right now. The first series was on Channel 4 on the BBC in England, first aired in 2011. The first series had only three episodes. Season 2 had three episodes. There was a special, and then the last two seasons, 3 and 4, there have been six episodes apiece. So there's only 19 of them, so you could catch up pretty quick on this. They're each about maybe 45 minutes to about an hour, hour and 15 each, although there's one that's feature length in season three. So the first thing that the first episode I thought was actually the weakest. So, George, you said you saw this finally this week, right? Season one of Black Mirror?
Just season one, yeah.
So season one, the very first episode, was probably my least favorite, but it was still pretty good. So they basically go in. It's called the National Anthem, yep. And a princess is kidnapped. And basically they post the kidnapping on YouTube and or a YouTube-like device. I believe they actually use YouTube.
Yeah.
And then it gets to... It gets up to the prime minister, and they have to decide what to do. Because they're going to either humiliate him or kill her. So they decide what to do. The one that I just re-saw the other day is the second episode, which is also one of my favorites, called 15 Million Merits, which is basically a bunch of people, and you get the idea that they're in a gym, but you find out that they're actually generating electricity for the world. That's what it kind of shows up as, they're generating electricity. And the only way to get out of this situation is you either... continue riding the bike for your life and generate electricity for the world, or you can't hack it and you become like a janitor and you can't talk to anybody, or you can go on to an American Idol type thing if you earned enough credits or merits and live in a very nice setting. So it's a great premise. It's really good, and it just shows you how it shows you a little future that could possibly happen, you know.
Yeah, I really love that episode. I thought it when they went in front of the judges, it's almost like going in front of like the Fates,
right,
and I think they even named him after the Fates. It's like hope and
and
faith and mercy or something like that,
right.
So it's like, yeah, that is like you're going before them and deciding what you're gonna do.
Yep.
It's not there to assess your talent.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's tough to talk about the show because you don't want to really give away, because there's so many layers to each episode. You don't really want to give away anything. But just granted, the 15 Million Merits, one of my favorites, great. And I love the one at the end of season three, too, which is the entire history of you, where everybody has this grain behind the ear. They call it the grain, and it allows them to record everything that they see and hear. So you could literally rewind to the beginning of the day and watch the conversation you had at breakfast.
Do you think you'd ever want to do that?
Honestly, it's a great question. I think you wouldn't really get anywhere. And they show at one point, like, the two of them are having sex with one another and they're thinking about other people.
Yeah.
Or they're just tuned off thinking about something completely different.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just going through the motions. It would be a great benefit, but it would also pretty much end a lot of what's human about humanity, you know?
Yeah, the way you remember stuff and retain things and the way your memory gets distorted. And I think there... one of the interesting things was, like, the guy kept overanalyzing and replaying some of the events throughout the day and probably overthinking them because...
Of course. Yeah. But what I like, too, is also having just the facts and then being able to say, you know what? This is what happened. That's it.
Right.
That's it. And it's like there's your version of the story, there's my version of the story, and then there's the truth, and we can actually watch the truth, and everybody else can too. You know, that's the one thing that I like about it. I think it's another one of my favorites, entire history of you.
Yeah, I thought that was great.
So again, there's only three in the first season. Those are the two strongest ones. And the National Anthem's still pretty good, but it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
It's kind of silly the way that they have it. They basically want to have the prime minister either have sex with a pig and humiliate himself, or they're going to kill the princess, so they decide what to do.
It's not as focused on like the technology aspect.
Right, yeah, other than just the fact that it's YouTube and how YouTube and Facebook have changed a whole lot of things in society. In number two, there's three episodes in number two, series two. Be Right Back, White Bear, and the Waldo Moment. And the one that was my favorite, this one was Be Right Back, which is a guy... and a girl, and they're moving into a country house, and you get the impression that they're just recently married, and she's pregnant, and he goes and he dies, and it basically at the funeral she meets a friend who says there's a way to get him back, and she starts talking to this entity that's her former boyfriend/husband. I forget what he is, but She basically starts talking to him based on all the photos he has, all the pictures, all the comments he made. So he talks like him and through the email. And then all of a sudden there's something even newer, which is he can actually show up in a body. And he's going to speak like him and look like him. And then it goes from there. And that was probably my favorite. And you haven't seen this season yet, you said, right?
Not yet.
But that one's great from season two. White Bear is pretty good. Waldo moment is pretty interesting. And talks about an election and White Bear. You have a woman wake up with amnesia and everybody's basically photographing her with their cameras. And you can't really figure out what's going on there. So again, they all have little twists on them. There's a special called White Christmas, and it actually has the guy from Mad Men in it, John Hamm. You have a lot of different actors and actresses that you're going to recognize from other places in this too. And the other thing about this is, since it's an anthology, there's a little bit of overlap. Like they'll show the TV show, they'll show the TV station from one episode into another episode, but pretty much they're all self-contained. Season three, there's some great episodes. One's called Nosedive, where there's a person who's worried about their status. And basically, everybody is trying to be very disingenuous and fake to everyone. So they're likable and accepted in society. That one's great. There's one called Playtest, where there's a person that goes into a simulated haunted house in order to get a little bit of money, and something goes seriously wrong. San Junipero, which is a great, great episode, and also another episode called Hated in the Nation. And season four just dropped in December. There's one called the USS Callister, which is similar to a Star Trek type of spaceship where the crew praise their all-knowing and fearless captain who's basically running the show. And a few others in there. Hang the DJ is also a great, great episode in Black Museum. So again, that is Black Mirror. It's streaming now on Netflix, and there's 19 episodes. Go in there and watch them. They're really, really good. It's done by a guy called Charlie Brooker. And a lot of people have been calling it a Twilight Zone for the millennium, and that kind of stands true. It's good stuff. The one with the killer bees is great, too. That's the feature-length one. It's about an hour and 30 or hour and 40 minutes long, and it has the girl from Trainspotting and the HBO series there that had Steve Buscemi in it.
The Boardwalk.
Yeah, Boardwalk Empire. She shows up in it as a agent, and these robot bees are basically building nests, and somebody's using them to terrorize the world. That one's pretty good, too. So, again, that's Black Mirror. So let's do the box office of the week here. We will go to the top 10 box office draws of the week. This is a section called Now Showing. So here's some choices on what to see that's currently showing in the theaters. This is in theaters now. We discuss the top 10 movies. I'm going to give you a little plot summary, and we will each, myself and George here, for each movie. Do we want to see this? Do we want to wait for the rental, or do we have absolutely no interest? So we're going to play See It, Rent It, Skip It. So these are the top 10 movies for the weekend of 4/6 to 4/8. So this is from last weekend. Number 10 is Isle of Dogs. It's rated PG-13. It's an hour and 41 minutes. It is animation, adventure comedy by Wes Anderson. Set in Japan, the Isle of Dogs follows a boy's odyssey in search of his lost dog. It made $4.6 million, $12 million total in 3 weeks. It's got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, which is pretty high. See it, rent it, skip it, George.
I got to see Wes Anderson movies, I think. I'm a fan of his.
Yeah, me too.
I got to see all of them.
It's always very intricate. He puts on these little plays within plays, and he's very particular about his stuff. So I'm the same. I haven't seen it yet, but this is one that I want to see. So again, it's at number 10 for the weekend. Number 9 is a movie called Pacific Rim Uprising. It's rated PG-13, an hour and 51 minutes. It came out a number of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Jake Petacost reunites with Mako Mori to lead a new generation of Jaeger pilots, including rival Lambert and 15-year-old hacker Amara, against a new threat. It made $4.8 million over the weekend, $54.8 total after 3 weeks. It's got a 6.0 out of 10 on IMDb. See it, rent it, skip it, George.
I see. This isn't even on my radar. I'd probably rent it.
You gonna rent it?
Yeah.
See, I never saw the first one.
But I haven't seen the first one either, so I don't know why I'd rent it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I'm a skip it on this one. Unless I see the first one, then it's a rent it. So it's a rent it from you. As long as you see the first one?
I'm into sci-fi.
Do you watch the sequels first and then go backwards? Have you ever had to do that?
I've had to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I end up kind of liking the sequel. Whatever movie I saw first, I end up liking more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I'd give the Pacific Rim franchise a look. Probably not in the theaters,
though. All right. All right.
It's expensive.
So it's a rental. And we're talking, what are we talking, like the $5 Amazon rental or the $1 Redbox rental?
This is the Netflix streaming rental.
Or the download for free rental.
I'll give Redbox a buck.
All right, all right. Sherlock Gnomes is number 8, still in the top 10, surprisingly. It's an animation adventure comedy. It's rated PG. It's an hour and 26 minutes. Garden Gnomes, Gnomeo and Juliet, very clever, recruit renowned detective Sherlock Gnomes to investigate a mysterious disappearance of other garden ornaments. It made $5.4 million for a $33.7 million total. It's been out 3 weeks, and it has a whopping 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb. See it, rent it, skip it, George.
It sounds cute, but I mean, I'd probably skip it. I'm not really into the kids' movies.
Now, what if you had a kid that was like around 3 or something, I mean, and he wanted to see Sherlock Gnomes?
I'd probably rent it.
You rent it. You're not going to spend $18 on a kid to see this, are you?
Especially not a 3-year-old.
All right. All right, so it's a rental.
Yeah.
It's a rent. I'm gonna skip Sherlock Gnomes myself. Again, unless there's a kid in the neighborhood that wants to watch it. I'm going to skip that one. Chappaquiddick is number 7. It's a new movie that came out this week. Of course, Ted Kennedy's involvement in the fatal 1969 car accident claims the life of young campaign strategist Mary Jo. It's rated PG-13. It's an hour and 46 minutes. It's a drama. It's history. A thriller. Maybe a comedy to some. But it came out this week and it made $5.8 million. It's got a 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb. My father saw it. And he liked it, he said. And that's pretty good for my dad. And he said he liked it. See it, rent it, skip it, George.
If your dad liked it, quote unquote, I mean, that's just the best praise I think I've ever heard him ever give a movie.
He and this was his other quote. It leans toward the Mary Jo story. That's what he said.
Well, I should hope so.
It leans toward the Mary Jo
story. I'm fascinated with this story. Uh-huh. I mean, I'm a fan of any Kennedy literature,
mm-hmm,
documentary, movie, so I think I'm going to see it.
You're going to see this one?
Yeah.
All right. I think this is a rental for me. I don't think I'm going to see this one. But again, yeah, same thing. I mean, I'm interested in the Kennedys. I'm always interested in the Kennedys, and I'm always interested in movies about the Kennedys and people around them. So yeah, I will see Chappaquiddick. Plus, I'm a big fan of Martha's Vineyard, of course, and New Englanders in general. So yeah, this is a rental for me. This is a Redbox rental, I think, for me. Number 6 is a movie called I Can Only Imagine. It's PG. It's an hour and 50 minutes. It's a drama, a family movie. It made $7.8 million over the weekend. Its total is $68.5 million in total. It's got a 7.6 out of 10. People are loving this movie. And basically, it is the inspiring and unknown true story behind Mercy Me's beloved chart-topping song that brings ultimate hope to so many people. Do you know anything about this? About the power of true forgiveness? Do you know this song, George, from Mercy Me?
What's the song?
I can only imagine. Yeah.
I don't think so.
That's the name of the movie. And Mercy Me's beloved chart-topping song that nobody seems to know.
Right. I mean, it might be before my time.
You. So it's $68.5 million total. I'm going to skip it because I don't know. I know Derek and Shay and myself talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and it was still in the top 10. I can only imagine. It's a skip it for me.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to skip that one at number 6. I can only imagine. Number 5 is a movie called Acrimony, which is by Tyler Perry, who's made like 500 movies at this point. It is 2 hours long. It's considered a thriller. A faithful wife who's tired of standing by her devious husband. She is enraged when it comes clear that she's been betrayed. What a surprise. 8.4 total, $31.7 million. It's been out for 2 weeks. It has a whopping 4.8 out of 10. All right, George, would you go see Acrimony? If it was date night, it, rent it, skip it.
That's a tired plot.
Yeah,
I'm skipping that one.
You're skipping that one?
Yeah.
Even though it's done by Tyler Perry. All right, I'm skipping it. I'm skipping it too. Black Panther, 2 hours and 14 minutes, action-adventure sci-fi. It's rated PG-13. For those of you who have been in the woods for the last 6 weeks, it's about the king of Wakanda who rises to the throne in the isolated technologically advanced African nation. His claim is challenged by a vengeful outsider who was a childhood victim of T'Challa's father's mistake. It made another $17.1 million over the weekend. Its total is $631.4 million after 6 weeks. Wow. See it, rent it, skip it, George.
I still have to see it.